today our Royal Commission submission. Hello again, I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to our latest post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. I made my submission to the Royal Commission today, and in this post I outline what I said. As submissions are open until Friday, you might want to consider following suit, and there is a link to my submission below if you want to borrow some of the words. This is a once-in-a-generation opportunity to shape the financial system. Referring to the draft report, I made the following points. Firstly, the culture in the financial sector needs to change to put the customer first. Mortgage brokers, for example, should have a best interest duty and commissions should be banned. Secondly, the current focus on financial stability is myopic, favouring large players over small and building structural risks into the system. The regulators have failed. Third, the large players are too big to fail and too complex to manage and need to be broken apart. A modern Glass-Steagall separation would achieve this and is proven to reduce risk and drive better customer outcomes and right-size our finance sector. And lastly, the existing regulatory structure operating in the Council of Financial Regulators needs to be changed, as its narrow focus on financial stability and a massive bet on inflating the housing sector is now at risk. None of the regulatory actors are without blame. And by the way, if you value the content we produce, please do consider joining our Patreon program, where you can support our ability to continue to make great content. Here is the link. And this is, in more detail, what I said in my submission. Digital Finance Analytics is an Australian boutique research, consulting and advisory firm which combines primary consumer and small business research, analysis of both private and public data sets, and economic modelling to analyse the dynamics of the finance and property sector. We've been operating since 2005. Our analysis is based on a rolling 52,000 household survey with more than 4,000 new data points added each month. From this, we're able to assess the state of household finances, their future property transaction intentions, and their level of debt and ability to service it. We have observed a considerable expansion of household debt in recent years, driven by low interest rates, more generous lending standards, and some degree of not suitable lending and fraud. The RBA reports that the household debt-to-income ratio is now around 190, and the debt-to-GDP ratio is one of the highest in the world. As a result, more households are in financial stress, as tracked in our mortgage stress trends, defined in cash flow terms, not a set percentage. And last month, more than 1 million households with owner-occupied mortgages were in difficulty despite the ultra-low interest rates. This equates to 30.6% of all borrowing households. This has been exacerbated by flat incomes and rising costs, but poor lending practice is the underlying cause. We also believe that as interest rates rise and property prices fall further, the financial state of households will decline further. This is because many are enjoying the wealth effect of property gains in recent years, but this is only a paper gain, and now prices are falling. The expectation is prices will fall further and faster. So turning to the cause of property price falls, following many years of over-free lending, the regulators have now intervened to an extent, and as a result, lending standards are tightening, with up to 40% fall in borrowing power for many compared with a year ago. In the main, though, this is a result of the existing regulations now being applied as originally intended, rather than new laws, as incomes and expenses are being tested as opposed to using a formula based on HEM, household expenditure measures. This resetting of lending standards marks a significant change in the market, and as a result, according to our surveys, demand for property is easing at the time when foreign buyers are receding and property investors are getting twitchy. According to the Bank of England research, property investors are significantly more likely to exit the market in a downturn compared with owner-occupied borrowers. And property investors who have driven the market higher in recent years are choosing to exit, sometimes forced by the switch from interest-only loans to principal interest loans, estimated at around $120 billion per annum. of the 1.7 trillion total mortgage lending pools. Our modelling shows that it is credit availability which has pumped up property prices and which allowed the banks and other lenders to grow their balance sheets and profits, and the reverse is also true. The normalisation of lending standards will rightly reduce credit, thus driving home prices and bank profitability lower. The catch here is that for more than a decade, Australia's economic performance has been built on the back of ever greater mortgage and consumer debt, home price growth and construction. Thus, from a policy perspective, government and the RBA will defend high levels of credit and home prices despite the risks. The other factor to consider is that as banks were so reliant on home lending to drive profitability, the incentives were there to overlend, bend the rules, and reward poor behaviour. They have not followed regulatory guidelines, nor have they met community expectations. In a word, greed, as your draft report shows. The policy challenge is that whilst the restatement of the current lending standards will assist, there are some more significant structural questions to be considered. Regulation and changes to the law alone cannot address the issues you call out. The culture within the finance sector needs to be changed to put customers at the centre of their businesses. Whilst talk is cheap, however, there is little evidence of substantial changes yet. The removal of commissions should be a cornerstone, as conflicted remuneration remains a significant problem. For example, mortgage brokers should have a responsibility to act in the best interests of their customers. The industry will resist this, but it is essential. Currently, the capital adequacy rules favour mortgage lending relative to productive lending to business. And as a result, according to our small and medium enterprise surveys, many businesses are unable to obtain finance or can only do so by securing their property. We believe the various risk weights reflects a myopic view of the financial system, and they need to be changed. Too much of the bank's portfolio of loans, up to 65%, is against residential property. This is extraordinarily high by international standards and presents a significant risk, to say nothing of the lack of business investment which has resulted. However, we hold the view that the major financial sector players are too complex to be managed effectively. Scale is now a disadvantage. Thus, we believe there is a case to break up the banks into smaller units. This would involve both vertical disaggregation, the separation of advice, sales, and product manufacture, and horizontal disaggregation, the separation of wealth, insurance, retail banking, and investment banking. In addition, there are significant risks from their operations in derivatives, and in an integrated environment, costs, risks, and profits are cross-linked. Given the size of the derivatives sector, significantly larger than before the GFC, the systemic risks are significant. To counter this, we advocate the implementation of a modern Glass-Steagall separation, where the high-risk speculative activities are separated from the normal lending, payment, and deposit functions within banking. This would have the added benefit of reducing the potential risks of a bank deposit bail-in in a time of crisis. Evidence suggests that the existence of a modern Glass-Steagall separation would reduce risk and limit systemic risks. In a post-Glass-Steagall world, bank lending would be more aligned with the deposits available, so their ability to make loans from thin air, as in the current system, would be curtailed. They would also be more inclined to make loans for truly productive purposes. We also need to consider the role of the regulators and the RBA. Murray's Financial System Inquiry recommended that the effectiveness of the current regulatory system be monitored. The Council of Financial Regulators is the peak body, chaired by the RBA, where key policy is set with the Treasury, ASIC, APRA, and others. However, none of their deliberations are made public, and it appears that all entities have been sharing the same view that growing housing credit was the chosen growth lever of choice following the mining boom. It appears that the weak supervisory approach from ASIC and APRA stemmed from this policy and was supported by policy rates being set too low. As a result, the systemic risks have been underestimated and the economic platform for the country narrowed. We believe that there should be a stronger advocate for the consumer within the regulatory system. Perhaps the ACCC should take on the role. But more broadly, the role of the individual regulators and how they connect needs clarity. The Royal Commission highlighted the lack of coherence and alignment, And we would also argue, perhaps beyond the scope of the current inquiry, that APRA has myopically focused on financial stability at the cost of good consumer outcomes and competition, that the regulators favour large players over small players, that the RBA policy rates are too low, that ASIC so far is still perceived as a weak and ineffective regulator. Thus, the area of appropriate and effective regulation is critical. As always, if you like what you've heard here today, please share and like the post and add a comment or question. And if you want to join the growing band of subscribers who receive alerts when we release new posts, do subscribe now. I'm Martin North, the Principal Analyst of Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you again next time.